to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show here. It's Tuesday, the 3rd of March. We're coming up on a very inauspicious anniversary regarding the Iraq War. We're going to be talking about that a little bit later. Meanwhile, if you'd like to join us on the air, the number, as always, is 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231. The webcam is running. The chat room is open. Matt is in the control room twiddling the dials and answering the phone. And let's get this show on the road, or to be more accurate, on the wires, on the airwaves, wherever you happen to be listening to it. The Dow, obviously, today was kind of an up and down, a lot of noise in the signal, to borrow an engineering term, but it declined about another 40 points. I don't think there's any doubt that we're well and truly in the 6,000s for a while. We're not going to see a rebound up to the 7 anytime soon. And of course, the next question is, how low can it go? Where is the bottom? It was only a year ago. The conventional wisdom was that the worst the stock market could do would be down in the 8,000s somewhere. Okay, well, then we blew through that barrier. We were in the 7,000s. Now we're in the 6,000s. People are saying, could it go 5? Maybe. Could it go 4? Possible. If there's a for real crash, could go all the way to 0. Now, obviously, our plunge protection team has given up any possibility of artificially sending the numbers back up so that they can be used as a political banner, as they were back during the Clinton administration. I think what the plunge protection team is doing, they're working very hard to allow the market to decline gradually so that there isn't an outright crash, which would have a tremendously devastating psychological effect on people. You know, if the market's going down, 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 after a while you get used to the fact that it's going down. And the numbers aren't quite as terrifying as they might be if it was all happening in a much shorter period of time. So I think that's kind of what they're trying to do. I don't know that it's going to work that much longer, because the plunge protection team, like a magician, works best when people don't know what's going on or don't even know that they're actually there. And now too many people know about them. They know that the government is deliberately intervening in the markets for economic and political reasons. And a lot of people are wondering, you know, with the market as bad as it is, why haven't we had a sudden, major, massive sell-off of such as we saw on Black Tuesday back in 1929? So, we're all feeling the impact of the economy, and there really is no indication that we have seen the bottom, that the deterioration is slowing in any way. Here in Honolulu, the state government is so strapped for cash that payments to the poor and disabled on the social entitlement programs, they've had to cut those payments in half. Not that they were all that great to begin with. We're talking a few hundred dollars a month, and that has been cut in half. And so it's just obviously the most disadvantaged portion of our society continue to be that portion which is the most impacted by the economic decline. Meanwhile, of course, we're hearing that once again, we the taxpayers are being asked to rescue the banks. Bernanke came out today and said we're going to have to expand the bank rescue, which means the Federal Reserve is going to start giving a lot of money to the bankers, ostensibly on our chit. Somewhere down the road, we will be expected to pay it back. And they're just handing it out. And you know something? I know most Americans, 90% of Americans, are saying, no, we can't do this. We already owe so much money on our mortgages and our credit cards and trying to put our kids through school and the skyrocketing medical costs. And you're asking us to basically accept another $30,000 to $40,000 worth of eventual tax debt for all these fiscal bailouts, which, by the very nature of today's announcement, aren't working. We keep giving money to the bank, and it's supposed to solve the problem. They come back and say, oh, no, problem's not solved. God, I have more money. AIG did it yesterday, you know, billions and billions of dollars. I mean, I'm kind of sorry that Carl Sagan is no longer with us any longer, because I'd like to have him do some voiceovers for the show saying, billions and billions of dollars vanishing into the cosmos never to be seen again. And, it's like it really has hit the stage of being monopoly money. They just print it up, create it out of thin air, and they're putting it, you know, into the pockets of people who are giving themselves bonuses and treating themselves like royalty. And in some cases, we know that some portion of the money is being sent offshore and converted to other assets. We, the American people, are being looted to create the golden parachutes for the corporate elite that created this mess in the first place. Now, I want to take you all back to 1999. I'm confusing my stories here on the notes. 1999, Congress repealed the Glass-Steagall Act of 1933. Now, what the Glass-Steagall Act did, it set up barriers between banks and investment houses, because it was thought that if banks and investment houses were allowed to sort of operate in each other's territory, that it would create not only tremendous conflict of interest that would disadvantage the depositors and investors, but it created an opportunity for collusion to artificially inflate prices and profits, and that this was considered a very serious contributor to the crash of 1929. So after we'd had the crash of 29 in 1933, they passed this law to make sure that banks went on being banks and investment brokerages went on being investment brokerages, and never the twain would meet. In 1999, Congress repealed that set of laws that had been passed in response to the crash of 29. And sure enough, as soon as it happened, we began to see this runaway speculation. Banks were operating as investment brokerages. Investment brokerages were encroaching on the banking area. And everything that Glass-Steagall was designed to prevent happened and has been happening ever since. And people were watching it happen. And industry experts, economists, had to know this is what was going on, because we'd been through it once before in 1929. And that was the reason this Glass-Steagall Act was passed. And the instant it was repealed, the people who were paying attention had to know what was going to be going on. And yet we never heard ABC, CBS, NBC warn us that that was what was happening with our investment markets. We just saw those numbers just climb through the roof. And they were being waved around as political banners saying, look how wonderful the administration is, because the Dow has gone right through the roof. And now we're finding out that the market was hideously overvalued by all the speculative game playing going on. Now it's coming back down. Gravity is a bitch. And I wanted to bring this out because we're seeing the media continue to try and scapegoat the subprime mortgage borrowers, or even just people who are trying to save money right now. Now they're the villains. I remember when I was a kid, we were always told, save your extra money. You may need it someday. Save it. Put it away. Piggy banks. You know, we all got piggy banks as children. They said, put your extra money in there. You might need it somewhere down the road. And now we're hearing from some of our leaders, oh, the problem with the economy is those people who are trying to save money. They need to be spending that. Every penny they spend is a shot in the arm of vitamins for our economy. The savers are now being called the bad guys. We're being demonized because we're not spending enough money to get the economy going again. I got a newsflash for you. We don't have it. We absolutely do not have it. There's a lot of magical thinking or wishful thinking going on in the halls of the government and our corporations. They so want to believe that there is still a vast ocean of untapped wealth out here in the heartland of America, and all they have to do is just figure out a way to game the system, and the valves will open, and money will shower forth upon them one more time. Isn't going to happen. You know, we've scraped so far down to the bottom of the barrel, we're almost through the wood and into the dirt. Anyway, we're going to take a break here for some commercials. Matt is in the control room. If you'd like to join us on the air, the number is 800-259-9231. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
This is is the GCN Radio Network, home to hard-hitting talk radio.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We've got callers waiting on the line. We're going to go to Alex in Texas. Aloha, Alex. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Aloha. Aloha. How's it going?
It's going fine. What can we do for you?
Yeah, well, I'm calling about, you were talking about the economy and that. Everything you said, I 100% agree with. But I wanted to also point out that another factor in the, out of many, it's almost hard to pinpoint exactly who's the prime culprit, which I'm pretty sure they're all in bed together, but is the student loan sector with Sallie Mae and their predatory lending. They've had, you know, I've known several people that they have themselves covered legally to the point where if you sue them over their predatory practices, that is, in fact, a violation of their contracts, and they can countersue. And they have themselves covered so well, they charge an exuberant amount of interest where a $20,000 debt can balloon to 90 to 100. I mean, these people are just they're no better than the mortgage lenders and the greedy banks. In fact, you know, they probably are the greedy banks.
Well, yeah, they are. It's just another, it's another facet of the same industry. Just student loans are a new market. And the really tragic thing right now is that in, you know, the last 8 years where all of our, high paying manufacturing and technology jobs are going overseas, you know, we've got young people who are going $100,000 into debt to get a college education with the expectation that they will earn more money throughout their lives because of it, and they don't. They come out with all of this debt on their heads, and they're only able to get the same kind of jobs as the high school dropouts are getting.
Yeah, correct. And also, as a, you know, as an example, the MIT graduate that had to beg for a job on the streets with a sign, and it got media attention, which then garnered him a job. Is that the new form of a resume, is to get on the streets with a sign that says, I'm an MIT graduate, please hire me? Is that
well,
the new resume?
I think it's only going to work one time. I mean, I saw the same thing once at the Disney studio. We were driving into the parking lot one day, and there was a guy standing by the driveway saying, you know, we'll write copy for food. And, you know, everybody's laughing, but sure enough, he got an interview and he got hired that day. Those kinds of attention-getting tricks, though, only the first person doing it, you know, is going to be able to succeed. And there are some very clever ideas out there. There was the guy who parachuted into Hugh Hefner's mansion to get his screenplay read, which Hef did. And, you know, these kinds of things can work. But the problem isn't whether or not any one individual is going to get a high-paying job. We should have jobs for all of our kids coming out of school. I mean, we deal with this situation here in Hawaii all the time because I teach, or I used to teach part-time, actually I'm still teaching, computer animation here on the island. And our biggest problem is we've got to create jobs to keep these kids here in Hawaii contributing to our economy, or we're spinning our wheels, because as soon as we get these kids trained up, they get lured away to Australia or England or Japan or back to the mainland U.S. The last year that I was teaching at UH, I mean, we literally were chasing the guys from Disney recruiting off the campus with a stick saying, you let these people go. I want them to come to work for me some point in the future.
And just one more thing.
Yeah.
And that is a good point. I didn't think about that. But one more thing is that these people, I think all these people and ads pushing education, those ads are paid for by these lenders. And also, what is the deal with this person that it was a big story and just disappeared into nothing about someone selling their virginity for a supposed $3 million, which was more than likely just ghost bidding on behalf of someone trying to get publicity? There was no real money. It was just a ghost bidding.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of publicity stunts that get done that way, and if you do it right, publicity can help you sell whatever it is you're trying to sell. In some cases, it's just wanting attention, and in our media society, you know, it's going to work. I tend not to pay attention to those kinds of stories.
It's horrible,
because,
isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's tabloidism, and I generally don't get into that kind of a story myself.
Corrupting society is what it's doing.
Actually, I view it as kind of a pointless distraction. Anyway, Alex, we got to let you go here. We've got another call coming in. Thank you very much for the call. We're going to switch to James in Arizona. Aloha, James. Welcome back to the show. What's on your mind today?
Yeah, I just wanted to get your point from a lot dive here on the news where they're trying to start saying, hey, you know, why don't people start going in and barter with the hospitals and doctors to get a cheaper price, you know? And I even heard a point being made like, you know, like with Walmart. You walk into Walmart and talk to, you know, somebody and try to get a price lowered down for you. Have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, basically haggling is coming back into fashion. I mean, you know, it's obviously we've seen it at the flea markets and those kinds of things and yard sales for a long time.
Sure.
It is, in fact, starting to come in to vogue in the stores. I know that Circuit City, before they went into their final crash and burn, if you talk to the manager and you say, okay, look, I like this. I can't afford this price. What can you do for me? And very often the manager say, I can shave a little, you know, I can shave a little bit off of there to get this deal done, you know. And it's just like we see, you know, on car dealerships. People will haggle the price there. And as the economy tightens up, people are haggling about just about everything. Now, obviously, I don't think there's much point to going into the supermarket and arguing over the price of a bag of carrots.
Right.
But for anything that's a durable item or a big-ticket item like plasma TVs and whatnot, what have you got to lose by asking?
Right. Right. Well, you know, it's just now that that's just coming out on like, the news to start, you know, doing that. Mm-hmm. I know, like, years before, you know, you try to go do that, you'd be asked to leave the store.
They're a little more reluctant to let people go out of the store empty-handed these days because too much of that happening and the store doesn't stay in business.
Right.
I think right now retail is recognizing they're far more dependent on the customers than they wanted to pretend. And, you know, they're wheeling and dealing. Even three-quarters of a sale is better than no sale at all. And, you know, just in my own day job, I've had some of my industrial clients come in and say, I need this. I can't afford your rate card. What can you do? And you say, okay, I'll do it for less as opposed to not doing it at all. And you just try and keep the cash flow going that way. So you've got nothing to lose by asking, and some people may be insulted by it. And you just say, I'm sorry, but I had to ask because I'm like everybody else. I'm just struggling to make ends meet, you know, while the government dips into my wallet to shower it all over Wall Street.
Right. Well, I'm sorry to take you off of subject there, Mike. I just wanted to get your outlook on that, you know, see what you heard about it.
Okay. Well, you didn't take me off topic. I think it's a valid comment to make. Everybody's looking for ways to get through this disaster because we haven't seen the bottom yet. And bartering and trading, which is the real meaning of barter, is you trade service for service or object for object.
Right.
The government doesn't want you to do that because they can't tax a barter transaction.
Right. Well, what do you think? I mean, is that, do you think that's like, could you go to the phone company with that, something like that?
Probably not. But, you know, for the smaller business to business, it actually does happen quite a bit.
Right.
You know,
well,
okay.
I just want to say I love your show, and I appreciate you getting to that question I had there for you.
All right, you got it. Thanks a lot for the call, Thomas. We're going to let you go here. We're going to take a break. I'm sorry, that was James we just let go. I'm sorry, I'm in the wrong place. We'll be back to talk to Thomas in Texas after these words from our sponsors.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
You're listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America, and apparently Thomas in Texas has dropped, so we're going to go back and talk about some other things here. And this idea of bartering and trading, you know, the government does like to discourage it because they want to be able to tax all transactions, and they haven't really worked out a way for people to pay taxes on things they swap. It does happen in small businesses a lot, where this company over here that does printing will print some brochures for a roofing company, and the roofing company will come over and patch the roof on the printing company's building. That kind of thing does go on all the time, and the government would like to find a way to tax it. So far, they haven't. As the economy begins to tighten up and the money becomes unreliable, I think you're going to see much more of this bartering going on, not only between individuals and small businesses, but, yeah, whatever. I mean, there's an old story about the reason if you ever saw the musical The Biggest Little Whorehouse in Texas, the Chicken Ranch, how it got its name was during the Great Depression, where the gentlemen callers who didn't have any money to avail themselves of the lovely young ladies in the place would show up with a chicken. And that was the payment for a romp in the hay. And because it was a very popular establishment, they eventually wound up with huge numbers of chickens on the property, which they were eating, and wound up being able to turn around and sell for actual cash. So people get very creative during hard economic times, and barter is definitely a big part of it. And again, what have you got to ask by losing? We had an incident here the other day where the dentist that my wife goes to see when she's having issues with her teeth called and said, you know, are you going ahead with XYZ getting done to your teeth? And she said, we can't afford it at this time. And they came back and said, how much can you afford? And the implication was that they were willing to offer a discount to get her in there now, by which I would infer that possibly they are also on the verge of going out of business as well. So you're seeing a lot of that stuff happening right now. Okay, getting back to President Obama. He was out there again today with yet another speech. And yes, he is a very good speechifier. It was one of the things that was really very obvious. He can get up there and he can just make you want to believe. And back at a time when he hadn't yet won the job and we didn't really know that much about him, his ability to inspire was seen as a plus, because it's a big part of what we need to get the nation moving in a new direction, to do all these changes we can believe in. Well, of course, now he's had the job for a little over a month, and we're finding out that basically there is no change. It's more of the same torture, more of the same push for war. And Barack Obama has not quit campaigning. He is still out there on the stump, going to all these places all over the country to get up there and give a very inspiring speech. And I think we're going to have a backlash on this, because people are beginning to realize that's all he does. He won the election. We voted him into office, and he's still out there selling and speechifying and saying, this is what we're going to do, but he won't say how. All these grand, glorious things, we can swiftly and boldly do this and that, and we're going to make everything wonderful, and people will have jobs. How are you going to do it? And he's off to the next speech. And I think we're at the point right now where Obama can't find any solutions. He's going to start looking for scapegoats, which brings me to the latest episode in the saga of Rush Limbaugh, affectionately known as Pills around here. Pills Limbaugh. Now, Rush Limbaugh is grandstanding his opposition to President Barack Obama, which is fine. I'm not happy with Obama myself. However, Rush Limbaugh has attracted a great deal of attention by going out with his radio audience and saying, you know, we want Obama to fail miserably, because then we, the Republican Party, can recapture Congress in 2010 and possibly even the White House in 2012. And he's getting a lot of press. He's being seen on all the major TV networks. They were dealing with him briefly on The Daily Show. You know, when The Daily Show mentions your name, you have arrived. So I'm waiting for Daily Show to talk about what really happened, and then I'll know, yes, I am there, but I digress. Here's the problem. Going out there and saying, I want Obama to fail, is sending a very startling message to America, because what it says is that Rush Limbaugh doesn't care what happens to his fellow Americans who are losing their homes, losing their jobs, losing their businesses. Doesn't matter. It's a small price to pay in exchange for winning political points in the great game. And so if it takes another million homeless Americans to bring down Barack Obama so the GOP can have an election comeback, that's just fine with Rush Limbaugh and, by extension, all of his supporters. And now we're beginning to see these indications where Limbaugh is sort of self-anointing himself as the voice of the GOP opposition. And as this moves forward, the entire GOP will all of a sudden be tainted with this idea that winning the next election is more important to them than the welfare of the people of this nation. And I think that is going to blow up in their face. Because all of us out here in the alternative media, first and foremost, we want our fellow Americans to have homes and jobs. We want them to have that whatever portion of the American dream is still achievable out there. I don't want to see my neighbor hurt just so that I can score points in the next election for my particular favorite candidate. That is an incredibly selfish and self-centered attitude, and I think it betrays all that is wrong with the public perception of the GOP, that they are greedy, selfish, self-centered, they care only about themselves and their political victories, and they don't care how it's going to hurt the people around them. And if things really start to fall apart, as I believe that they will, Rush Limbaugh, because of his ego in getting up there and saying, I want Obama to fail, he has set himself up and his supporters and his listeners and indeed the entire GOP to be the scapegoat for Barack Obama if things really start coming apart. Because Barack Obama will get up there on the stump with that voice that just convinces people, and he will say, we were sabotaged by the Republican Party that refused to work with us during this time of national emergency, and the American people will believe him. And the GOP will be utterly destroyed with this nonsense of standing up there and saying they hope the president fails during this economic crisis. It's one thing to say, I hope the president fails in his beautification program, or I hope the president fails in his quest for, you know, more intrusive espionage on the American people. But when you're talking about the economy and hovering at the edge, or maybe even already be in a Great Depression, and you want the president to fail on rescuing the economy, that is the most self-centered thing that Rush Limbaugh could say, and that his supporters, the ditto heads, are going along with this insanity, betrays that they are so caught up in their own political game playing, they don't see how they're hurting ordinary Americans around them. And for that reason alone, I think the Republican Party ought to be kept out of power in 2010 and 2012. And I say that being a Republican myself. This is a very dangerous attitude. Party above everything, party above the welfare of the nation. That is not something we want in power. We absolutely do not. I think Limbaugh is going to destroy himself on this one, which is fine. When he does, I want his golden microphone. So there. This is one of the reasons I call myself the anti-Rush, because of lunacy like this coming from the EIB network. All right, we're going to take a break here. The music means it's time to sell some products and make a few pennies. Yeah, right. So we're going to take a break here. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors. If you want to join us on the air, 800-259-9231. We'll be right back.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means
they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
Americans who own guns, people like you and me, prevent over 1 million violent crimes every year. Get the facts on gun control. Visit armedandsecure.org.
This is the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We've got a couple of stories we're going to finish up today's show on. We have seen in recent weeks, in the aftermath of Israel's invasion of Gaza, major propaganda efforts by Israel to, first of all, shore up its justification for having broken the ceasefire in the first place back on November 4th, and then going in and dropping white, flaming white hot phosphorus all over school kids in Gaza. And it is relentless. They're pounding and pounding and pounding. And, of course, inevitably, they are dragging out Nazis and the Holocaust. They're waving it at us every single excuse we can get. I commented a couple of weeks ago where they came out with this news about this escaped Nazi war criminal. You know, it's thought to have died back in, like, 1974. And it was like, this is news today. Why? Well, because it's another excuse to wave Holocaust and make everybody feel sorry for Israel so we don't pay attention to the fact that Israel is behaving worse than the Nazis to Palestine. And they want to go on waving Holocaust at us and all the rest of that. And the latest episode in this yet one more excuse to wave Nazis and Holocaust at everybody so that hopefully we'll feel so sorry for Israel that we'll just write them a blank check on setting fire to children is a story that came out from Der Spiegel, where historians working at the Auschwitz Museum are claiming that they have found a roll of fabric in the former factory of a German car part supplier, Schaeffler, that they are insisting was made of hair shorn from the Auschwitz inmates. Now, Schaeffler, of course, is saying this is utter nonsense. It's just another one of these strange stories. Now, first of all, yes, it is true that the prisoners in the slave labor camps had their heads shaved. Very simple reason. They needed to get rid of the lice that was the source of the typhus epidemics. When you have a typhus epidemic in a population, shaving the body hair is one of the things you have to do to get it under control. Okay, now that being said, folks, the next time you go to your hair cutting place and you get your hair cut, grab a few pieces of it and see if you can twist it together and get it to stick into some kind of a yarn or thread, which would be the necessary first step to weaving cloth. You're going to have a very hard time doing it. There are certain hairs which do this very well, obviously wool from sheep being a prime example, or cotton, you know, from the cotton plant, they will spin into thread. My grandmother actually had a real spinning wheel in her living room, and I used to play with it. I used to get some cotton from the first aid kit and just see about making thread with it. You can't do it with human hair. You really can't. And basically, this is another nonsense story, and we know what's going on. Schaeffler Auto Parts, they supply auto parts for Germany's top automakers. They're also in serious trouble financially because the car sales have declined. And Schaeffler, because they supply the parts, they are struggling along. And we already know what's going to happen. There's going to be a lawsuit for Holocaust reparations directed at this company at a time when it is barely surviving. And they're going to destroy this company so that they can once around waver. Oh, you know, the soap thing didn't work out. The lampshades thing didn't work out. Now they've got the cloth made out of the Auschwitz. It's nonsense. Folks, next time you get a haircut, test for yourself if you can twist your hair into any kind of a yarn or thread or string that can be used to make cloth. It is nonsense. Utter, utter nonsense. Now, speaking of nonsense and getting back to one of my favorite topics for bashing, apparently Nancy Pelosi was unable to attend the rally on global warming because the airport was snowed in. And I say this with tongue firmly in cheek because on the front page of whatreallyhappened.com today, there is a video of this rally in Washington, D.C., where they're talking about the serious threat of global warming. These big snowflakes just falling all around them. And you'd think at least they would hold off until summer, the height of summer, when there might be a convenient heat wave around that they can use to exploit this. But they are in such a rush to sell this to you. They're in such a rush that they're having their PR events all around the year, and it's embarrassing. It really is. It really is. Speaking of embarrassing, and back up to Minnesota, apparently Norm Coleman is very unhappy with the fact that after weeks and weeks of legal wrangling, he still can't claim to have won the election. And it does appear that Al Franken is still slightly in the lead in all the various permutations of the recounts that they've tried. So now Norm Coleman is filing a motion saying they can't really know because of all the confusion, which Coleman himself has helped create with all the various recounts and the rest of it. And now they're saying we should set the election results aside. And, you know, it's absurd. And it's just one more illustration. We don't have an election system that we can trust in this country. It's wide open to rigging and fraud, and then after that, the lawyers can come in and tinker with it until it becomes a contest of who's got the most money will win the office, which is not the way it should be. We are the nation that put men on the moon. And we can't, you know, we're in the nation that has networks of automated teller machines that won't lose a penny from one end of the country to the other, built by, in one case, the same company that makes one of the voting machines. And yet we have a voting system that is completely unreliable, open to fraud and hacking. I don't believe that's by accident. It has to be by design. We have to get an honest and accurate voting system in place, and I'll tell you the main reason why. There's two reasons. First of all, unless and until the government can prove that it honestly and fairly won the election by which it claims authority over our lives, then we the people are neither legally nor morally obligated to obey that government's dictates or to pay their bills. We don't have to prove fraud to them. They must prove that they won honestly and accurately. Certainly when they talk about us having to pay all these loans that they're taking out, we should be able to know for sure that those elections were honest and accurate. Anyway, it's just absurd that we cannot come up with an election system that works. And it has to be intentional. Anyway, let's see. We're moving on down here. Okay, getting back to Israel. We're almost to the end of the show today. I'm starting to wind down here. Oh, here's a good one. This came out yesterday. Apparently, the CIA destroyed some 92 tapes of the interrogations of people that were captured in Iraq and Afghanistan and other places. And these tapes of the interrogations were destroyed. And the federal prosecutors are saying we're probably not going to charge anyone for destroying the CIA tapes because it's not really obstruction of justice. And the reason they're saying it's not obstruction of justice is because the CIA says the only reason they destroyed the tapes was to protect the identities of the interrogators. Now, this is real George Orwell doublespeak. Because if torture is illegal, and it is, under both U.S. and international law, and the CIA is destroying the tapes to conceal the identities of the war criminals, that is obstruction of justice. The CIA is saying flat out, they destroyed the tapes to destroy the evidence of war crimes and to protect the identities of the war criminals. That is obstruction of justice, and I think it underscores the fact that our government is totally out of control. They don't obey the law anymore. And that is a real problem. You know, we're dealing with this idea, you know, the American people can't survive anymore these bailouts. And yet the government goes on doing it, and our taxes are supposed to pay for it. That sounds a lot like taxation without representation. And that, I was taught in school, is a very good reason to get rid of a government. Anyway, that's it for today's show. We're going to head on out into the wilds of Oahu Island for a little bit. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, 5 p.m. Central Time, with your phone calls, more news, and more of whatever else is going on, lunacy in that asylum on the Potomac. And we'll be back tomorrow. Until then, aloha, America.